The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode, we'll dig a little deeper into the September issue of Our State Magazine, which is featuring articles all about North Carolina's rural roots. And our first article is entitled, For the Love of Country. A career in economic development trains you to lean into data. Yet when it comes to describing the value of rural life, one writer finds more meaning in memories than metrics. From a childhood in the red clay of Randolph County to now raising his family in the sandy loam of Wayne County, the author feels most at home and in community in North Carolina's wide open spaces. And this is a photo from a drone, and we're looking down upon his house and garage area. And there's a plowed field around the house, and on another corner of the field, there's looks like crops growing. There's several fields that are a little bit fallow, but then there's a forested portion of the land as well. And so we have the mix of colors from brown to green, to a pale green, and then to a dark green showing in this picture. Full disclosure, like many things, this essay didn't turn out as planned. The goal was simple. The task should have been easy. I wanted to make an argument quantifiable and data-driven for the value and worth of our state's rural people and places. I wanted to show that rural is not something to be fixed, or as a colleague once framed it, not a problem to be solved, but a place to be celebrated. I wanted to paint a picture, based on numbers and facts, of opportunities and assets, not one of lack, scarcity, or deficit, the color palette too often used to paint the portrait of rural life. The words should have come easily. I've spent the better part of my professional career working in rural North Carolina's many small towns and communities. My career in nonprofits has supported rural and under-resourced areas across the state, giving me the privilege to learn from folks like the academic researcher, the community development practitioner, the local small business owner, and the classroom teacher. It's an argument that must be made. As cities and suburbs continue to sprawl and more farmland and woodland turn into subdivisions or vacation homes, rural might be one of the most misunderstood words in the modern American vernacular. I hear it in the conversations that I have with family and friends, strangers and acquaintances. Rural is either pictured as an idyllic, bucolic, and pastoral escape from the harried pace of our modern lives, or it is viewed as backward, frozen-in-time mindset that needs to be pulled, kicking and screaming, into modernity. Neither narrative is fully accurate, of course, and seldom is it based on any lived experience. Because we lack the huge swaths of desolate land that some other states have, North Carolina is one of the most densely rural states in the nation. Rural in North Carolina is different from rural in North Dakota. Instead, we are a state of crossroad communities and small towns. Yes, there are places where you can get lost walking on a mountain trail or paddling in a coastal swamp, but mostly North Carolina is more populous kind of rural. The North Carolina Rural Center categorizes a rural county as having fewer than 250 people per square mile. By that measure, 78 of our 100 counties are rural, accounting for more than 3.7 million of our 10.8 million residents. That's a lot of rural folk. But as I wrote line after line, draft after draft of this essay, the numbers felt inadequate. Rather, I kept drifting back to my childhood to explain what it is about rural places that called me to return as an adult. One of my most vivid memories growing up happened at the end of a long summer day in the woods of Randolph County. My mother had put me out with the sun that morning and expected my return at dusk. On this day, the hours were particularly active, past building forts, riding bikes, and shooting BB guns. My mother, aghast when I came back home covered in mud, dust, and possibly insects, sent me straight to the bath. I remember that after a good long scrubbing, as the water drained from the porcelain white tub, a ring of North Carolina red clay circled the basin, darker at the top where it had settled in the bath water. Years later, like countless others, I was ready and willing to leave home when the time came. I went off to college in Chapel Hill, and the larger world opened to me. In my mind at the time, there was no going back. I spent the next 20 years building a life in the Triangle, navigating my way through undergrad, graduate school, and into adulthood. I somehow convinced a farm girl from eastern North Carolina to marry me, and we made a home in Raleigh. First an attic apartment in the Five Points neighborhood, and then later on a quarter-acre lot in one of the city's suburban rings. We formed many lifelong friendships along the way, and it was there when we started our family. As the years passed, though, we began to feel disconnected from where we lived. We started to feel the call of home, as we realized that the places we were both so ready to leave as teens looked different once we had our own children. So we returned with our kids and experiences of the wider world in tow to my wife's family farm on Big Daddy's Road in Wayne County. Today we live here and farm the land with her family, overseeing about 500 blueberry bushes and a small community-supported agriculture operation. The farm is modest by local standards, but we're growing slowly and sustainably on our 50 acres. This is my home now. This is where I hope I will die and where I certainly expect to be buried. It was good for my soul to be back in nature and to enjoy the quiet solitude that I had experienced as a child exploring those Randolph County woods. But what ultimately pulled me back into rural life was a different longing, to be more fully and authentically connected to others. Life in the city felt transitory to me. Neighbors would come and go. Homes would be sold, jobs would be taken, adventures pursued. Though the connections were strong, the anchoring felt temporary, like an airport layover before the next leg of a trip. Relationships feel more intentional in rural communities and small towns. While you might never deliberately seek them out in larger, more populous settings, for better or for worse, you cannot escape your neighbors here, and they cannot escape you. They are just as much a part of this place as you are. You will see them in the grocery store. You'll sit next to them at high school football games. You'll pray with them at church. You'll work with them at the barbecue fundraiser for the volunteer fire department. I'm more engaged with these folks because they're more present to me as individuals, not just faces on the highway during rush hour. They've come out in a hurricane to help me fix a broken generator. They have, without hesitation or second thought, loaned me farm equipment like a disc harrow, a seed drill, and even a tractor. I went to elementary school in a community aptly named Farmer, where our schoolhouse shared a crossroads with a small general store. That shop was where I had my first taste of a moon pie and discovered the delights of dumping salted peanuts into my cold bottle of Coke. Connected to the general store was a combined post office and barber shop. I remember going in there with my mother and walking past the leather barber's chair on our way to pick up or drop off mail. Rural people are entrepreneurial at their core. It comes from a long history of self-sufficiency and resilience born of necessity. Where else is your post office also your barber shop? Rural places have problems and challenges too, and we should be honest about them and their root causes. Substance misuse, healthcare workforce shortages, discrepancies in educational opportunities, broadband access and affordability, employment prospects, and small business support and resources. But we should also be honest about the many stereotypes of rural people and places and their root causes. No two rural places are the same, and lumping their residents into a single racial, ethnic, political, or socioeconomic identity is wrong and lazy. Over the last 30 years, the state's population has exploded. I welcome these fellow North Carolinians and am grateful that the newcomers are here. They make us better. But I ask Metro residents one thing. Take the time to visit a rural community, to stop in a small town. Turn off the GPS and avoid the highways. The places you will discover are not vestiges of a bygone North Carolina. They still have a rich life and colorful stories to tell. For the people who call them home, these are places where children are born, parents are buried, and weddings are celebrated. They're where lives are layered deeply, literally and figuratively, into the soil. In Farmer, there was a local artist named Lou Hammond, but my mother always called her Mama Lou. One of her paintings, which hangs in the hallway of my house, is of an old man dressed in overalls playing his banjo on a porch swing. I mentioned to my brother once that I was considering having the piece's wooden frame redone with something newer and not so beaten up. He protested. The wood of the frame, he told me, was taken from the old man's home in Randolph County, from the very place where he is sitting in the picture, strumming his instrument. That frame will never be touched. My daughters are about to leave home to head to school in the city. I'm excited for them. I want them to get out and see the world. I want them to have life experiences they cannot get here on Big Daddy's Road. However, if they should ever feel the same call to return to rural life, I hope they will have the courage to make that decision. To live, to work, to worship side by side with their neighbors through the good, the bad, and the ugly of human existence. To feel beholden to those you cannot hide from. To be unable to settle into the background. To know your community and neighbors in a way that's immediate and intentional. It's now clear to me how much Randolph County's red clay is a part of who I am. I carry it with me when walking the sandy loam of eastern North Carolina. The value of rural is not in its numbers or data alone. Rather, it's in the lived experiences of its people, those who are caretakers today for the places that others will call home tomorrow. Much like my own life, this essay didn't take the path that I expected or had planned. But in the end, both it and I arrived exactly where we needed to be. Todd Brantley is the author of this piece. He's former vice president of public affairs at the North Carolina Rural Center and is now a senior advisor at the consulting firm Armstrong McGuire, where he supports nonprofits that serve rural and under-resourced communities. I'll go back for a moment and I'll tell you about some of the pictures in this article. There's a map of North Carolina with shaded in green and pink colors, or I guess tan colors, from Cherokee, Burke, and Surrey to Anson, Bertie and Dare. 78 of the state's 100 counties are deemed rural due to their population density. And as you can probably imagine, most of the ones that are not considered rural are where our centers of, you know, the Charlotte area, the Raleigh, the Triangle area, and some of the Fayetteville area, and down around some of the coastal bases and things like that, like Wilmington area and up in the mountains in the Asheville area probably. So as you can imagine, that's where everything else is considered. And I guess the Triad area extending from the Triangle over to Winston-Salem would be considered non-rural. While the move to Wayne County was a return for Amy Brantley, Todd and their children, have all made it their home as well. And so there's a picture of them in their country kitchen. And here's a picture of Todd Brantley picking and no doubt sampling plump blueberries for Sister Oaks Farm, their family-run farm stand, U-Pick, and produce box business. And on Big Daddy's Road in Pikeville, a morning may find Todd out on his New Holland tractor, Nora placing lettuce seeds in a starter tray, and front porch rockers awaiting neighbors and kin. And we have here's the picture that he was mentioning about Lou Hammond's painting of the man playing the banjo on his front porch, sitting in his swing. Lou Hammond's painting captures a nostalgic image of a front porch picker. Its frame is quite literally plucked from the scene. The next article is entitled Answering the Call. In Randolph County and across the state, volunteer firefighters never hesitate to help a neighbor in need. What does it mean to put your neighbor before yourself? Sometimes it looks like jumping in your personal vehicle, meeting a group of friends and neighbors at a fire station a few miles away, donning protective gear, boarding a 40,000-pound fire engine, and driving or riding headlong into an emergency. Other times it looks like buying out weenies and buns from every grocery store in a 30-mile radius and spending a Saturday afternoon cooking hot dogs to raise funds for a friend whose baby girl is at Duke Children's Hospital. Or hauling your antique tractor into town, decking it out in lights, and driving it down Main Street for the annual Christmas parade. Or recruiting your sister, aunt, and mother-in-law to dress as clowns for an elementary school skit during Fire Prevention Week. In rural parts of North Carolina, volunteer fire departments and the firefighters who fill them are not only emergency responders, but also community centers, event coordinators, fundraisers, and cheerleaders for small-town citizens who need causes to rally around and someone to support them in the process. North Carolina is home to 1,217 fire departments. Within those departments, 38% of firefighters are paid staff, while 62% are volunteers. For those of us living in rural areas of the state, when we dial 911, we're reliant on people who are truly committed to putting their neighbors before themselves to come to our aid. In Randolph County, my home county, located in the center of the state, we depend on 20 departments with 556 firefighters. 232 of those are paid positions, while 352 are volunteers. And we have a picture here. It says, in June, Franklinville Fire and Rescue hosted fire departments from around Randolph County for an all-day training burn focusing on search and rescue techniques, hose advancement, fire suppression, building of ventilation, and understanding fire behavior. And they're doing a controlled burn of, it looks like, an abandoned or to be demolished house. The history of fire service in Randolph County dates to 1911 when Asheboro, the county seat, organized Asheboro Hose Company. Firemen pulled a two-wheeled cart with a hose wound around the center. Once on scene, they unwound the hose, connected it to a hydrant, and sprayed water on the blaze. In 1914, the department purchased a Ford fire truck that carried a longer hose, nozzles, axes, and four firemen. Today, Asheboro operates stations 1 and 2, signifying its position as the first fire department in the county. Liberty followed with Station 3 in 1927, Ramseur and Randleman with Stations 4 and 5 in the 1930s, and Seagrove with Station 6 in 1957. Seagrove is where my husband and I live. He grew up there like multiple generations before him. I'm a transplant from Jackson Crete on the other side of the county. Not only did Dustin grow up in Seagrove, but he also grew up at the fire department. There's a picture of him at about 4 years old with a red Seagrove Tigers t-shirt as his uniform, a book bag as his air pack, a red plastic helmet, and his sister's pink swim goggles as his mask. His parents were longtime volunteers at Seagrove Fire Department. His dad served 2 years as fire chief. Dustin remembers falling asleep on the large meeting table and hopping off the school bus at the station. Today, he's the volunteer fire chief at Seagrove, following in his parents' footsteps. He's a full-time firefighter, too, working 24-hour shifts every third day as battalion chief for the town of Kernersville. He takes the skills and training that he's paid to learn and reinvest them into his local community. It's his version of community service. When Dustin was small, we would fix a pot of coffee and pour him a cup and put so much sugar in it, he probably stayed up all night, Daryl Von Cannon says. Von Cannon has been part of the Seagrove Fire Department since the beginning. At age 13, in the days before age minimums, he was told he was the youngest fire department member at Seagrove. He served 41 years as active volunteer fireman, assistant chief, and then on the board of directors. He grew up about a football field away from the original station, built in the late 1950s, on the corner of Main and Broad Streets. Von Cannon remembers three red phones in the neighborhood, one at his grandmother's, one at Tawny Allman's house, and one at Seagrove Grocery. Whenever the fire siren went off, all three phones were used to alert the firemen, and Von Cannon would ride his bike down the hill to the station. In the days before fire taxes, departments relied entirely on donations and fundraisers. In Seagrove, whose fundraisers consisted of fish fries and barbecues, those fundraisers consisted of fish fries and barbecues. While those events required time and hard work, they also fostered community and instilled a connection between the fire department and the residents it served. With the implementation of fire taxes, departments receive more money on a consistent basis, but the loss of those community events means that residents aren't as connected to the department or to each other. Seagrove Fire Department no longer has to fry fish and hush puppies to pay for new fire trucks, but the department's auxiliary, made up of members whose husbands or other loved ones served as firefighters, is making an effort to strengthen the department's community connection. My first interaction with the fire department was on Halloween, when the department hosts a trunk or treat for local kids and their families. 3 months into dating Austin, I attended as an interested girlfriend, curious to see what this whole thing was all about. Last year, dressed as a rain cloud, I was part of a team of auxiliary members and firefighters who handed out candy to more than 400 children. In September, the auxiliary is bringing back Southern Randolph Country Days, the beloved event featuring country, gospel, and bluegrass music, craft vendors, kids' games, a parade, and plenty of food was sponsored for years by the Seagrove JCs. As the core group aged out and several longtime businesses closed, enthusiasm waned and the event went away. But with 43 members of Seagrove Fire Department, 11 auxiliary members, and the resurgence of some local businesses, we're hopeful that this event will once again be a community celebration, a way to honor the things that hold us together in this rural corner of the county. I'm tickled, Von Cannon says. It's putting the fire department back at the center and making things happen in Seagrove where people have something to be a part of. Across the county at Tabernacle Fire Department, which serves the Jackson Creek, Tabernacle, and Trinity areas where I grew up, my parents and grandparents before me, auctions, turkey shoots, and car shows raised money to build the original station on U.S. Highway 64 in 1981. Tabernacle is Station 18 in Randolph County. Fire Chief Brent Powell joined the department in 1994 at age 21. Today, he's a full-time battalion chief at Station 1 in Ashboro, in addition to his volunteer chief position. Classmates from Southwestern Randolph High School find it hard to believe that the skinny kid who turned pink any time he stood up to speak in front of a group now teaches fire classes all over the county and beyond, and holds leadership positions at two departments. But for Powell, it makes sense. I found my niche in life, he says. On a recent afternoon, Powell sits in the office of Jackson Creek Body Shop, which he inherited from his father. The clean-cut 51-year-old looks the part, with the telltale fireman mustache and gray Ashboro Fire Department sweatshirt. It's his day off, so he also wears a John Deere ball cap. In addition to being a full-time fireman, volunteer fireman, and auto body man, he's also a farmer. The week his father died in 2018, firemen showed up to operate his body shop, bale his hay, and feed his entire family. His relatives were amazed. Powell was appreciative but not surprised. He'd been on the other side of that generosity many times. He talks about the struggles that volunteer fire departments face. In 2008, Tabernacle had 55 volunteer firefighters. They even considered capping the number. Since then, that number has steadily declined. Today, Tabernacle relies on 6 full-time and 10 part-time paid positions, and the volunteer roster fluctuates between 12 and 14. There's so much to do now with kids and ball games and churches, Powell says. There's not enough benefit for volunteers to make the commitment to get up at 2 in the morning for a house fire or someone with chest pains. In addition to running calls, volunteers put in a minimum of 36 training hours a year. They're encouraged to enroll in classes for certification such as medical responder and hazmat. Departments have gotten creative in efforts to recruit and retain volunteers. Community members and auxiliary groups sponsor meals on training nights. Members can serve the department for functions like kids' birthday parties. Volunteers with 5 years of service receive a discount from the state on their annual hunting license. After 20 years as a volunteer, a firefighter can retire, unquote, and receive $170 a month from the state of North Carolina. Powell wrestles internally with the idea of stepping away from the fire service and when. He He's put in 27 years with the Asheboro Fire Department. He wants to run that body shop full time, so no one will be surprised when he sets out his retirement date with the city. But he says it's less clear when to separate from Tabernacle. It's hard to turn off the pager and know my neighbor needed help and I didn't answer. Being married to a volunteer firefighter causes you to recognize your own selfishness. When a call goes out, my first thought is, I hope it's not bad. I hope the person in need isn't seriously injured or at risk of losing his home, but I also hope my husband doesn't have to go. I don't want him to be in danger, but also, we just sat down to dinner, or we're supposed to leave the house to meet friends in 10 minutes, or we're knee-deep in a painting project that's needed doing for months. I even feel more selfish when he disappears without hesitation. Sometimes he listens to the radio a while, making sure everything is covered. That's one perk of being the chief. He doesn't run every call. He has well-trained men and women, some full-time, some part-time, who volunteer, who cover the majority. But when he does need to go, he's gone. Like this past New Year's Day when a mobile home caught on fire around 7 a.m., he was up early drinking coffee and warming up the smoker to cook a pork tenderloin for New Year's lunch. By the time I sleepily came downstairs, he was gone. I tried to listen to the radio traffic, but if you don't know the codes or station numbers or have a general understanding of the operator's cadence, it sounds a lot like the adults in Charlie Brown cartoon. He returned at 11 a.m., having put out the fire with his team and called the Red Cross to assist the displaced family. He walked in and said, "I'll cut the tenderloin into chops and grill them." Problem solved. A family rescued and our family lunch rerouted. When you run into situations not knowing what you're going to find, most everyday dilemmas seem small. It's a lesson I'm learning. For all of the untimely calls and possible dangers, volunteer fire departments bring benefits I never anticipated. This past Christmas, our first as a married couple, Dustin trimmed the entire Seagrove Fire Department in lights. White, twinkling lights edged the building frame and doorways. A triangle of colored lights formed a tree on the top. A star, fashioned out of a piece of scrap metal, lying around the station, hung atop the flagpole. It was simple, but according to the response from local residents, you'd have thought he commissioned the Biltmore decorators. Everyone loved it. I drove by every single night. It went right along with the other downtown businesses that decorated their storefronts. It was the backdrop for the beginning of the Christmas parade, a small-town Saturday spectacular coordinated by the auxiliary. It greeted attendees for the department's annual Christmas meal, where members past and present and their families gather around the table and Santa brings gifts for the kids. It was exactly what the holidays are supposed to be about, bringing light to a world that can be stressful and uncertain. The light is there all year, although at times it's easier to see than others. It shines brightest when the situation is around dark. It comes in different forms depending on the need it's asked to fill. A protector, a rescue, a helper, a healer, a friend. Volunteer firefighters are called to be all of those things. They never know what role they'll have to play, but they always know the answer. And for those of us who call the rural communities home, we're forever grateful. Leah Hughes King is a writer based in Seagrove. Well, we've run out of time today for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 781-1973. This is for people who are blind and print impaired and available regularly as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. Thanks and have a great day.